Well, hello and good evening. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our live stream on the 17th of March, 2020. Thanks for coming and spending some time with me. We've got a fair number on the channel already, and those who've been through the pre-show will exchange a few comments, observations. What I want to do is to try and give you some pointers as to what's currently in play, some thoughts about what might be going on ahead, but also probably leave you with as many questions as I can answer, because really, I'm not sure anybody quite knows how this is all going to play out. But it's great to have you on board and to spend some time with me tonight. What I'm going to do first is just go through the normal introduction. From there, what we will do is just a few introductory remarks. During that time, I'm not going to be looking at the live chat. So if you have specific questions for me, just hold off for the moment while I just go through this little bit of introductory material. There's a couple of things I want to do, as well as give you the latest on the market, because there's some interesting things happening now. I want to just give you a bit more information, and then we'll go into the question answer. I want to try and spend as much time tonight as I can on the Q&A, because I think there's lots of great questions that I've had, and many people would like some answers. So just in terms of this introduction, we're going to run through the house rules in a second, talk about our models as normal, just a few key slides, then some questions and answers, and the bulk of the session will be your questions and answers. So whatever you want to ask, feel free to ask me. And then there'll be a sign-off. Generally, this runs for an hour and a half or so, maybe slightly longer, slightly shorter, depending on how we go. And as always, this show will be posted and available after today as well. Now, in terms of the house rules, this is not financial advice. I'm not qualified to give it. I'm unable to give it. It's illegal for me to give it. I don't know your individual circumstances. If you need that, please go talk to a financial advisor. This is based on my own analysis over many, many years, my own modelling, my own opinions, no more, no less than that. Please play nice in the chat room. No racial slurs, please. We are actively moderating this stream. We have kicked a few people off over the months. We try not to. There are so many good conversations to be had on the channel, and I want to encourage free and frank exchange, but please no racial slurs. This is as at the 17th of March 2020. Who knows what all the fine things will be in 6 months' time or whatever, but this is actually how things are just at the moment. Please use Walk the World if you want to get my attention. There are so many chats going on, so many cross conversations. I don't necessarily catch them all. But if you use that Walk the World, there's a really good chance that you'll get my attention. I also have Super Chat enabled, and there's two things that you can do with Super Chat. The first is you can make sure that your question goes to the top of the heap and has a really good chance of being discussed. And also, if you feel that you'd like to support our efforts, you can also make contributions direct via Super Chat. And those are really appreciated. Just to explain, we don't make any money in terms of profit out of this. This is all about informing and educating. Quite a lot of costs involved in creating all of this content, of course, so any support is always fantastic and greatly welcomed. Just in terms of the core model, this is the way we do our research. So this is actually based on quite deep analysis. We survey customers, 52,000 households plus small businesses. We take data from a whole bunch of different sources, crunch it into a model, and then that flows out into a whole bunch of different sources, including the stuff that comes on the blog and, of course, on the YouTube channel. We also do client assignments. Some of those client assignments we get paid for as well. Although, actually, in the last week, I've had three clients basically walk away from contracts simply because of what's happening with the virus. So our own business is feeling it already, which is not good. We cut and slice the data all sorts of different ways. So we can look at it by segments, locations, different types of property owners, those sorts of things. So it's a Rubik's Cube that we can manipulate, and that gives us quite deep insight into what's going on. Now, I want to just show you this chart to start with, because it's important to understand that whatever may be happening on the stock market, it's all really about the bond market. And this is the investment grade issue. So you can see there that the spread is now up at 2.5. It was down considerably. That is basically telling you that corporates are having to pay a lot more for their funds. And that is at the heart of the disconnection that's going on in the financial markets at the moment. Now, we'll come back to that shortly, but I think that's a really good starting place for this conversation. Now, what I want to do is to pop across to this one. So this is actually the live feed of data that we receive. So the ASX actually closed 5.77% up today at 4393. And the financial services sector index was up 9.2% to 4582, which is pretty amazing. The volatility index was very, very high, up at 47. This is remarkably high. And you can see I've deliberately cast this all the way back to 2009. So you can see that we're approaching volatility levels that we had right back in 2009. The banks have also recovered considerably. ANZ, for example, was up 9.37% today to 1845. CBA was up 10.6% to 67.65. The NAB was up 6.76% to 1721, I should say. And Westpac was up 6.3%. The regionals were also up with Bank of Queensland, 5.48, Bendigo, 6.4. They're both up more than 5%. So there's definitely been a turnaround. I'd also want to highlight that the Aussie dollar is now down at 60.64, down 0.87% on the day. That's a pretty much a big concern. And the euro Aussie dollar cross is also up just a little at 1.8312. But again, going back to bonds, the 2-year bond is just down 3.5%. You can see there that there was a considerable drop. That was when the Fed and the concerted action around the world happened. It's come up a little bit from there. The 10-year bond is up 1.74% to 1.055. So you can see there that there's still pressure on the bonds. And the last one I want to show you is the volatility index from yesterday. This is from the US volatility index. And you can see there that the volatility index in the US at 80.39 is now higher than it was in the global financial crisis. And that tells you pretty much all you need to know about the level of uncertainty in the markets at the moment. And that went up after Donald Trump referred specifically to the risks of recession in the US. So let me just go through a couple of quick slides. There was a very important conversation that Michael O'Rourke, the chief market strategist at Jones Trading, said, quote, "They blew it. The Fed panicked and the market is spooked. The S&P 500 registers all-time highs less than a month ago, and the Fed has expended all of its conventional and unconventional tools. The key takeaway will be that they have truly expended all of their ammunition, and this is the action of a central bank that is scared." Now, not everybody agrees with that, but I have to say, I think he's pretty much spot on. And of course, Phil Lowe came out yesterday and said, "The Reserve Bank stands ready to purchase Australian government bonds in the secondary market." Well, there you go. That's as clear and single as you like in terms of quantitative easing. They're going to be conducting 1-month and 3-month repo operations. So this is about providing liquidity into the market until further notice. And they're going to be monitoring the conditions, of course. They will announce further policy measures to support the Australian economy on Thursday. And I see a few people are asking. Matt, thank you very much. I really appreciate that contribution. Thank you so much. The bank will announce further policy measures to provide the Australian economy, to support the Australian economy on Thursday. Now, I'm expecting them to cut the rate to 0.25%. That's pretty much what they said would be the lower bound in terms of the way down. They will formally announce quantitative easing. Now, the question is, will APRA also release credit to allow essentially the banks to run on smaller levels of credit? And will there be other support mechanisms for the banking sector too? Not sure, but we'll have to wait and see. But that's my view. I think there will definitely be a rate cut on Thursday. Now, just in terms of up-to-date data, the ABS confirmed home price rise. It's a bit academic, frankly, because prices are going down from here, of course. But they basically had 4.7% in Sydney, 5.2% in Melbourne, 1.8% in Brisbane, down 0.8% in Darwin, and even Perth went up a little bit. And you can see there, comparative to last year, that's quite significant. Now, of course, that's based predominantly on CoreLogic data. ABS doesn't do independent data collection on home prices. They rely on CoreLogic. The question, of course, is how does CoreLogic come about these numbers and what transformations do the ABS do? It's not totally clear. So, but anyway, that's the information there. So therefore, stock went up. The value of property went up. I suspect we'll see that reversing soon. Now, this is a very interesting article. I don't know whether you saw this, but I chuckled about this and I just wanted to share it with you. There was a very interesting article Christopher Joy wrote to the Reserve Bank and basically said, you should be throwing maximum liquidity in to support the market. You should be buying mortgage-backed securities, corporate bonds, everything, right? Not just treasuries. And Stephen Grenfell, who's a former deputy governor at the Reserve Bank of Australia, wrote this piece in the AFR and basically said, the RBA's job is to back banks rather than bailing gamblers. And I thought that was a really good observation because there are lots of people who've taken significant positions, assuming that the Reserve Bank is going to end up buying all sorts of different assets, just as Japan is doing the Bank of Japan. So watch this space, but I thought that was a fascinating thing. Find the original article if you want. It's in the AFR. Now, S&P has come out and basically said that losses for banks. Damien, thank you very much. I really appreciate that contribution. Thank you so much. Nearly doubling to 30 basis points of gross loans and advances. This is the latest information. Business loans will lead initial losses, that they will be looking to central bank support to enable the banks to fend off funding squeezes, that banks are going to probably show more forbearance to borrowing hardships. Debak, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Forbearance to borrowing hardships. Market dislocation has affected some hybrid issuances. I covered this in my post yesterday, if you saw that. And the banks will suffer more pain if outbreak fails to subside as forecast. Now, S&P is basically assuming this is a relatively short, sharp issue, and then recovery comes quickly. I think they're being so, so optimistic. And as I said just before we started, the UK just came out. They changed their strategy overnight and said that the virus is now going to be focused by way of eradication rather than developing herd immunity. So people are being effectively asked to hunker down for several weeks. And the research paper that actually recommended this strategy made the point that we could be thinking 12 to 18 months for an antidote or a vaccine to be created, which means that this sort of hunkering down process could be more than just a few weeks. We could be talking months. And just think about the implications of that for the global economy and for our local economy. These numbers from S&P will, I think, prove to be way too light when it comes to reality. Now, Grattan also, and this is really important because it helps you to understand how I came to my modelling. So Grattan made the point that around 37% of Australian workers don't have paid leave entitlements. That's about 2.2 million of them are casual employees with no paid sick or annual leave and no entitlements for ongoing work. A further 2 million are self-employed, and they actually show you the distribution in terms of the income. More low-paid workers are in this category. And what that basically means is that we have a significant proportion of people in the economy who, if they are forced to stop work, either because they get ill or because of a clampdown, they have no backstop. And that is, I think, what the government needs to consider when it comes to the next package. They also showed that younger people are disproportionately likely to be in casual work and not have paid leave. About 1.5 million parents, which is about a third of all working parents, have no paid leave. And that's critical because if, in fact, schools are actually closed, the question is, how do you handle that? So many people could get caught. And then by industry, and this is important because I took these industry categories and plugged them into my model, because not all industries are the same. So cafes, restaurants and takeaway food services have some of the highest proportion of employees without paid leave. Building completion services, ditto. And you can see that some of the others have less. And the code here is that the first bar is without paid leave, the second bar is self-employed, and you can see how that works. So this means that a significant proportion of industries are going to be very badly hit. Now, the other thing, this is from the Reserve Bank, they did some analysis on what would happen if the stock market started to fall, how would that impact consumption? And basically, they showed through this chart that there were considerable issues. So as wealth was eroded, Steve, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. So as the stock, as the value of wealth, for example, if stock markets fall, people actually give up on categories of consumption, including durable goods, motor vehicles, and household furnishings. So the way to look at it is the bars are the distribution of types of spend. The dots are the proportion in terms of how it would move. And basically, the response of motor vehicles is particularly large. A 1% increase in house wealth raises expenditure on motor vehicles by 0.6%. The reverse is true as well. So this is really important because think about all the things that are happening. We're talking about incomes being crimped because effectively people are being asked perhaps to hunker down more, not travel, or effectively businesses are going to be unable to support households. Many people don't have support. And then from a wealth perspective, as wealth erodes, that also creates issues. So this is essentially the cocktail of issues that we're trying to deal with. And then finally, Roy Morgan published a Snap Business Research today that shed in mid-March 60% of Australian businesses reported now being affected by the virus, up a massive 45% from the month ago, according to a special Snap survey. Only 40% of businesses now report not being affected. And it disproportionately hits different businesses. So manufacturing, wholesale and recreation and personal industries hard, over 70% of businesses in manufacturing, 78%, wholesale trade at 74%, recreation and personal 83%, information, media and telecommunications 75%, property and business services 74%, and transport, postal and warehousing 72%. And the other thing they showed was it's not uniform across the states. South Australia at 68% is the highest, New South Wales 65%, Victoria 64%. So this shows you that there are significant issues. And in fact, they also made the point that it's the majority of smaller businesses, not the micro businesses, not the very small ones, but the medium-sized businesses effectively, that are actually most hard hit, between a turnover of 1 million and 5 million. This is huge and serious. And so I've tried to incorporate all of this information. Now, we need a stimulus package, a significant one, and New Zealand announced one today. And Rosemary asked, in your opinion, how did the New Zealand government do today? My view is I think they did it pretty well. So they basically announced a package equivalent to 4% of GDP. That's double Australia's spending per capita. And the strategy here is to support businesses and to support households as well as industry. Dan, thank you very much. I really appreciate that contribution. Thank you. They're talking about a wage guarantee, welfare increases, an aviation industry bailout, tax relief, new health spending, a whole bunch of stuff. And they made the point that this is going to affect every part of their economy, and they're going to see New Zealanders lose their jobs and some businesses will fail and will have extended periods of deficits. And our debt as a country will have to substantially increase. The forecast is that New Zealand is heading towards a 3% hit to GDP without the package and a 1% hit with it. That's, I think, the sort of quantum that we need in Australia too. I'm afraid the first phase stimulus was, you know, didn't focus on the right areas. And, you know, while some people might say, well, just let them all fail, The fact of the matter is if you do that, then effectively you hollow out businesses, you hollow out households, and effectively you are left with an economy that is pretty much messed up. Now, I did some modelling on mortgage stress. Today, at least February, mortgage stress was 32.9% of households. I've run my model forward to August on the assumption that all of that data that I showed you before is true. And mortgage stress, Michael, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Mortgage stress goes up from 32% to 37% by August. Ilya, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you. This is huge. This basically means another 200,000 households will get into difficulty. And I've assumed a level of support in this model because I think the government will do something. This is beginning to illustrate what we're seeing. Now, to take that further, I also can run my scenarios through my model. And, you know, the scenarios are a way of thinking about what's going on and looking at different solutions and alternative. I've used in my baseline scenario the fact that COVID is here. So whereas last time I had two scenarios, one with and one out, it was only a month ago, I was saying it may or may not arrive. Well, it's here. So let me share with you now the scenarios based on the latest modelling I've done today, which is as up-to-date as it can be. This is probably going to be wrong, but basically I've said there's a 5% chance that this will turn out to be a little local difficulty with an unemployment rate of 5.7%, quantitative easing, QR, home prices in this scenario drop, but only by around 10%, 5% chance. There's a possibility it was a short-term wonder. So this is basically it, you know, we eradicate it quickly within a couple of months, 3 months, a bit like perhaps Korea if they're going down that way. In that case, we would see, again, the RBA rate at 0.25% unemployment, 5.9%. Mortgage stress rate's up at 38%. So that's pretty much where my modelling was. The bank losses much higher. But home prices in this scenario down between 15 and 25%. And that assumes fiscal, so a lot from the government, quantitative easing, and probably some negative interest rates for some types of wholesale funding. 5% probability. If it's a longer term crunch, again, 0.25% unemployment now above 6, it's very important to understand that the 40% level and the unemployment rate, you know, that's anything above 6% is going to trigger mortgage stress significantly, higher bank losses. Now, I've put 9 in there. That's because I'm assuming that we're going to get considerable support from government. And I'm assuming that the government will effectively find some way of providing funding to households to make their mortgages. So that might support lower levels of losses. Not sure about that one, but that's my assumption. But even that case, I'm looking at 20 to 30% falls in home prices, and that's 20%. And one bank will probably need to be bailed out in that situation. And then I've got one called global disruption. So this is essentially where this thing runs. It runs globally, and it runs for a longer period of time, maybe a year or more. In that case, we're going to see the interest rates zero, I think, or thereabouts. Unemployment rate, very, very high. I mean, this is getting very gloomy now. 40 to 45% in mortgage stress, 30% plus in losses. Now, that's what S&P said. In my scenarios, it's probably higher than that, but that's where I've gone because I've assumed, again, that the government will try and do some support to help. But nevertheless, in this scenario, 30 to 45% fall. And basically what I've said is over the next, let's say, couple of years, because this is going to take a bit of time to play out. To give you a... Matthew, thank you very much. Appreciate it. To give you an idea, the global financial crisis happened in 2007. The peak drop in prices in the US were two years later. So it took a bit of time to work through. That is, I think, why I'm suggesting it's going to be perhaps higher. Michael, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. 55% probability, I'm afraid. So that's more than 50% chance of that is a scenario. So it's the one now that I'm favouring. I also have to take account of what I call the real pandemic. So that basically is where the illness keeps rolling, where deaths keep rolling, where effectively everything is thrown, very low interest rates, but massive disruption, recession, depression type And in that scenario, huge amounts of mortgage stress, huge amounts of bank losses. And home prices, well, there's no floor really. I said 80%, but you know. And in that situation, there would be bank failures. Now, I'm assuming that in this scenario, scenario four, banks will effectively still be there and the government will support them through various mechanisms, including bailing out, and maybe there may be some bail-in stuff going on as well. We're already seeing discussions around hybrids being converted to equity to support the banks. We know that there's about 35 billion of hybrids that were due to be put in the market and now can't be put in the market because the pricing's all gone all wrong. So very significant up. So that's my current scenarios. So I fear the bad news is that I'm giving a more than 50% probability to a 30% minimum fall in home prices over the next couple of years. And that's a big deal. It's probably worse than many other people are suggesting at the moment, but that's based on my modelling, and I'm pretty confident that, you know, if it plays out like I think it's going to play out, it could be that bad. Now, if they get the virus under control quickly, if it stops the global contagion, if we start seeing businesses come back online, if we start seeing unemployment not rising, won't go that far. I want to highlight unemployment is the absolute key here. If people aren't able to be kept in jobs one way or the other, then essentially they can still pay their mortgages and people survive. But if unemployment goes up, then we end up with lots of people unable to deal with their mortgages. There will be some hardship programs, and I'll talk about hardship in a second. But nevertheless, this is a big deal. Okay, so with that rather gloomy introduction, I do apologize for that. I'm now going to come over and look at the questions, and there's been a lot of questions. Brenda just said, if people were fighting each other for toilet paper now, imagine if they'd bail us in, there would be civil war. Yeah. Matthew says, column missing, government collapse. Well, possibly. Look, the issue is that we are very much looking at a significant crisis. Now, tonight, I'm probably not going to talk much more about the virus end of things specifically. Robbie and I did a post today, which I recommend you go watch, where we titled it After the Deluge, and we talked about what needs to be done. But one of the critical points is to look at South Korea, where they've really focused in on containment. Absolutely containment. And if we do the same, which basically means isolation, it means cramming people's styles for weeks or months, but getting the virus under control, that is probably the best way of tackling it. The worst way, which is what the UK was going to do, was effectively run a strategy of letting the virus run but slowly to build up herd immunity. They've changed their tune now because they realise that that strategy would probably kill 250,000 people in the UK, which was much higher than their first modelling. And so they've basically turned turtle and now said, no, we're going to go into containment mode. I'm expecting more announcements on containment here in Australia. I think we'll hear that, you know, probably tomorrow or the next day, because we have to actually understand that the only way to control this thing is to actually contain. Look at what the US has done. They're banning effectively meetings of more than 10 people. I was talking to somebody earlier on today who's in San Francisco. 6.5 million people are now locked down over on the West Coast. Can only go out to get food, visit the doctor and other very minor things. They can also do a little bit of exercise, but other than that, they've got to stay there. That is the sort of thing I think we've got to consider. Now, with that sort of caveat, let's go and have a look at some of the other questions. Mike says, it looks like the key indicator in your model is the unemployment rate. From a mortgage perspective, it is, Mike, because if you look at the difference between mortgage performance and home prices in Perth and surrounding area and the East Coast, the big difference has been unemployment. It's been a lot higher over in the West. We have the same credit conditions, but in the West, prices are down 21% still. Down the East Coast, you know, according to CoreLogic, they've gone up. It's the unemployment element which is fundamental to how things play out. Max, Maz, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Thank you. That's great. Now, Jeff says, is my super... Sorry, Tom says, sorry, I've read two lines. Tom says, is my super safe from bailing with ANZ? Well, question is, is it a self-managed super fund that you've got at the ANZ? Or is it in an ANZ-managed superannuation fund? As I understand it, the superannuation funds are basically corporate entities and corporate businesses, and they are not necessarily subject to the same bail-in discussions as personal accounts and deposits and those sorts of things. Remember in Australia, APRA, the Reserve Bank and the government has absolutely said there is no intention at all to bail in deposits in Australia. They've said we can bail in hybrid securities and, you know, there's talk about that maybe happening, but not deposits. Now, it's not the same in New Zealand. In New Zealand, there is a clear and explicit strategy to bail in deposits if needed. It's called the Open Banking Resolution. And if you want to go look at it, it's on the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's website. So in New Zealand, there is an absolute intent to take deposits if needed. In Australia, that doesn't exist. Now, the question is the any other instrument effectively a backdoor to allow it to be done in a crisis? And of course, what Robbie Barwick would say from the Citizens Party is we've got to try and nail that. And in fact, there is a piece of legislation tabled now in Parliament to try and underscore that deposits can't be grabbed. I think my own view is if deposits were grabbed in Australia, it would probably be the end of the government before anything else. So it may be unlikely, but there's a little crack there that said it could happen. Okay, what else have we got? Are government bonds safe? That's from Richie. Well, the theory of government bonds, of course, is that governments can never go broke. Well, if you're Venezuela, you might have something to say about that. Or Greece or Crete or, you know, Italy. In theory, they are the most secure of instruments. And, of course, treasuries in the US are regarded as the most secure in the world because the chances of the US economy and the Federal Reserve falling over is meant to be very, very low. I have to say that in the normal course, what I've said is true, and they will probably never. But in this sort of uncertain situation, who knows? Honestly, who knows? This could be an unknown situation. I want to say this now, I'll say it again later. There is no risk-free investment that you can make. Whether it's deposits, whether it's gold, whether it's silver, whether it's crypto, whether it's bonds, whether it's EFTs, whatever it is, there are risks attached. And that is the uncomfortable truth about investing. Now, in theory, the rate of return you get has some relation to the risk you're exposed to. But in practice, that is not true. To give you an example, deposits, as you may or may not know, are actually unsecured loans that you give to the bank. So they don't just hold your money. It's actually formally a loan that you make. It's an unsecured loan, so it actually stacks up behind a bunch of other secured categories. And what that means is that in a crisis, that loan may or may not be paid back. And John Adams and I did a couple of posts on this on the Interest in the People channel, where we discussed the hypothetical scenarios that might exist. Now, chances are, in most situations, we will not see that happen, but there is a risk. The other point to make is that the $250,000 deposit insurance scheme, which does exist in Australia, don't think it exists yet in New Zealand, although they're talking about doing something later. Might be a bit late. But in Australia, $250,000 per relationship per brand. In other words, if you had money at Westpac and money at St. George, and it was more than $250,000, it would be capped at $250,000. Now, that has to be activated by the government when a bank fails. It doesn't exist now. It's basically a promise that it will be activated if needed. And that comes us back, of course, then to bail-in, because if you actually bailed in deposits, you could actually stop the bank falling over in the first place, which means that governments wouldn't have to pay the 250k deposit. So that's part of the complexity here. Now, I've argued to a number of people from Parliament who phoned me today that we should be pushing very hard now to reinstate the $1 million or unlimited deposit arrangement that we had back in the global financial crisis, because I'm concerned that there could be liquidity issues with the current arrangements that have been put in place. And there seems to be a bit of support from some of the people that I've been speaking to that that would make a lot of sense. So let's see whether we can push that. So if you want to make a phone call to politicians again, that would be a good thing to recommend. Increase the deposit insurance scheme from 250k to $1 million or unlimited. They did it last time, and they did it to ensure liquidity in the banking system. Okay, Brendan says, do you still have the same thoughts on the customer-owned banks and credit unions than the big guys? Yeah, I do. So my analysis is still that it's the big guys and regional banks who are most exposed. Some of the regional banks are really exposed at the moment, in my view. They've got funding issues, they've got credit issues, and they've got an issue about trying to compete for loans. Of course, ahead, I think everyone's got to now understand the chances of banks writing more loans for mortgages and those sorts of things has dropped considerably. People won't be able to transact. They won't want to transact. I'm expecting a considerable drop in the number of new sales from this point forward. It may take a little while to work through. But, you know, you don't want to go to an auction, do you? If you've got to keep social distance, right? You know, 2 metres from everybody else. Can't run an auction. Can't run an open house. I did a show with Edwin the other day on that, and I think it's quite funny if you want to watch it. He always manages to make some really good comments and some good jokes as well. So my point would be that the real situation that we're in is that, you know, it could get quite tricky here. But come back to my point. No absolutely secure investment vehicle exists. And that's true, I'm afraid, for metals. Now, there'll be a lot of people who actually are holding gold and silver. And, you know, you might be right. Difficulty is, if you look at what's happening to gold and silver prices at the moment, they're actually a bit depressed. In fact, silver's way down. Now, that's because there's a link between the metal price and the derivatives. The derivatives are people who've taken positions but don't hold the underlying. And as people trade them in volatility, they're also being forced to liquidate other positions for margin calls. And many of those are liquidating gold. So, tricky. And remember, of course, that gold is also potentially there. It can be confiscated by the government at whatever price they want. That's an old act, but it still exists. So, you know, this is quite tricky times. The margin call thing, I think it's worth just, you know, there are lots of people who are suddenly finding that they're being asked to pay up more, particularly organizations who've taken short positions or long positions, have taken options and those sorts of things. So we're going to see a lot more people wrestling with liquidity to be able to support those positions. Now, Power Blaster said, do you think people might turn to cryptocurrencies after all this? Well, maybe. I mean, Bitcoin is way down, of course, as you perhaps might expect. You know, I've told a number of people who've been on the channel before that the problem with Bitcoin is nobody knows what it's worth. There's no way of actually working out what the value is. It's purely market driven. And if sentiment swings one way, it could go up. If sentiment swings the other way, it could go down. Now, it's worth saying that the Bank of England chief, who's actually just about to leave, made a speech in the US a few months ago and suggested that maybe the US dollar would at some point in the future no longer be that backstop currency. And he was suggesting that the alternative might be some sort of crypto-type currency, but he's not talking about Bitcoin. He was talking about some sort of central bank type of coin, which effectively would be backed by a combination of currencies or something, right? So there is some talk about that, and I've done a few posts on that previously. I think it's highly unlikely that the sorts of cryptocurrencies that are currently there, like Bitcoin, are going to survive in their current incarnation, because central banks are also experimenting with central bank digital currencies. And the fact of the matter is that, as Mark Carney said, you know, it's going to change sometime in the future, not quite sure when, There's also an argument that it could be gold-based, of course, and that's perhaps why some countries around the world are holding gold. I'm not sure about that. I mean, there is some people who want to have a gold base for the currency, but I'm not sure about that. Others are saying some sort of crypto. So too soon to say. But, you know, what we are actually at is a significant turning point in the way that the economy works. And it's worth just reflecting on this. The central banks have thrown massive amounts of liquidity at the system. The bond rates have not responded as they needed them to. So bond rates are still higher than they want them to be. And the question is, if they go on doing QE and they go on doing the sorts of stimulus that they've done for a long, long time, is that going to change? In other words, could you take rates even lower if you put even more liquidity in? Can you turn the ship around? The answer is no. It's a one-way street. Chimera, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Thank you. It really is a one-way street. And, you know, that tells me something, that maybe it's time to think differently about how to think about our economy, the role of banks, and very importantly, the role of central banks. I think central banks have let us down badly here. And there's been a fixation to try and secure the financial system, but not enough focus on securing the real economy. We don't have a productive economy in Australia. We are totally reliant on massive mortgage debt, massive home prices, and digging up stuff and flogging it overseas. That is not a sustainable business. We need to have a different business model ahead. And so my view has always been that we needed a way to think about the future differently. Now, I think this disruption has the potential to lay a new path, but it requires considerable intestinal fortitude, because basically it means stepping back from what has been done. The risk is, if we don't, we're going to simply follow the likes of Japan, who's been buying everything. If you look at the bank in Japan, they've been buying EFTs, they've been buying bonds, mortgage-backed securities, shares, anything that moves. And the balance sheet's got bigger and bigger and bigger, and the interest rates are still negative, and the economic momentum is not there. So my view is, time to think differently. Now, there's a wonderful question there. What does a high level of volatility in the market mean? Okay, it basically means big moves. So price moves up, price moves down, right? Now, you need to understand that there are some people who hold stocks and bonds and other securities for long-term growth. So Warren Buffett's a good example. Warren Buffett will find an undervalued stock, buy it when it's cheap and hold it long-term and see it grow. But there are many more people who are trading. So they take positions and assume that prices go up or prices go down, and that movement or volatility essentially allows them to make money. So I'm expecting some banks to be making lots and lots of money from trading at the moment, depending on which side of the trade you're on. Now, in a bear market, which is what we're in, you often see massive amounts of volatility and you see the odd up day before it drops again. And that's precisely what we're seeing. So there's no way that we can call this the bottom yet. And I personally think that we're going to see this going on for several months, because until the virus is understood and the amount of implications of the virus are understood, the markets are going to have a significantly negative view. So volatility is movement, and there are people capitalizing on that movement. I have a very strong view here that we should be introducing a transaction tax, because actually we need to take out a lot of this volatility. We need to take out all of this spurious financial trading activity. And if we had a 0.5 cent transaction tax on every transaction, that would generate significant income, which could go to governments and help pay for real things and real services. So that's one of the things that I would add to my list of things that we should be doing: introduce a transaction tax. Now, Chimera said, what do you think the timeline for house price decline could look like? Is it gradual? Will it fall quite abruptly as people try to get out, particularly investment properties? It rather depends. I think in the short term, we're going to see government support for people with mortgages and government support for the banks. So there won't be necessarily an immediate exit, although many investors are already been trying to sell. So a lot of the properties that were on the market over the last couple of months were from investment sector, because incomes from investment properties have tanked, not least because rentals are lower. I'm expecting the rate of decline to accelerate over the next 2 to 3 months. And then the amount of decline and the trajectory will be completely determined by, one, unemployment, and two, what happens to the virus. If it's a short, sharp thing and the economy bounces back, which of course is what many people are still thinking it will be, then maybe the price drop won't be as severe as I showed in my scenarios. But I am basing my view on the fact that this could be 6, 9, 12 months of very depressed activity. And that, in that situation, in a year's time, I would expect home prices to be at least 30% lower than where they are today on average. It'd be varied, a little bit difference in different locations, perhaps less so. Vaily, I think it is. Thank you very much for that. I've just sold my house. It settles on the 3rd of April. Do I take my cash out of the bank? Now, well, look, I can't give anybody specific advice. I can tell you I've still got money in the bank. I've spread it across multiple different banks. I've avoided the big four and the regional banks. I've gone with smaller credit unions and building societies, partly because the deposit scheme has a limit roughly of 20 billion per institution. So go for the smaller ones rather than the bigger ones. Many of the smaller institutions are less leveraged in terms of capital, are less leveraged in terms of need to make profit, particularly in the credit union sector, and I think are more conservatively run. Now, they may have some liquidity issues, but relative to the others, I think less so. So what I've done is I've spread the risks across multiple organisations, but I am still in the banking system. And by the way, I'm still holding currently term deposits that are paying quite good returns. In fact, very good returns now because, of course, rates have dropped dramatically. That's my own strategy. Now, there are other people who will say, no, bring your money out of the bank and, you know, buy metals or buy crypto or something. But as I said earlier on, there are risks in those too. There is no such thing as a risk-free. So, you know, it's a bit of a trade-off, I guess, as to which is which. But I don't know. Now, what's happened here? I just want to make sure that I'm still live. Yes, I am. Okay, sorry. I've just noticed a drop in the traffic, but I think it's come back. Okay, so that's a little bit of that. Now, what's this one? Jen C., thanks, Martin, for keeping us ahead of the curve and away from the cliff edge. Well, thank you. Look, I just want to acknowledge I've had more than 100 people write to me in the last week expressing thanks for what we've done over the last couple of years. In many cases, the story goes, we listened to you, we repaid the mortgage, we've got less debt, we've, you know, managed our affairs more conservatively than we might. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I mean, to me, that's the biggest that I can get in terms of, you know, gratification for doing this stuff, to see that people are actually in better state than they might otherwise be. And in a way, I feel that's what this channel is about. So thank you for telling me your stories. And, you know, I'm always interested to hear people's accounts of how they've used the material and essentially thinking about what's going on here. Andre says, Australian Military Bank, last people to lose their jobs. Yeah, well, you know, there are small organisations, credit unions out there, who are very conservatively run, have huge capital assets in the bank, only really take deposits and make loans, and very importantly, don't have any exposure to derivatives. Whereas, of course, the major banks have massive exposure to derivatives. Okay, so gold, silver, crypto has made a couple of suggestions there. I want us to also acknowledge a lot of people have suggested lots of different people for me to get on the channel. I'm working on it. Believe me, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. For example, I hope to have Michael Hudson on. You may know Michael quite soon. We're just trying to negotiate when we're going to do that. So that hopefully will be in a week or two. There'll be other people too. So keep those suggestions coming. I can't necessarily always get them to come on immediately, but I always take those note of those suggestions and reach out and see what we can do. So keep those suggestions coming. Okay, now Jen C says, re-bail in, realistically what balances would they bail in? 50k? Nobody knows. So if you look at what happened in Europe, basically they didn't bail out in the last, you know, sent as it were, they left people with some money, but above a certain level, they actually said, we want to take a proportion. There's no information about that because the bank, RBA, because the banks, and because APRA said we're not going to bail in deposits. So there's no information about it. So I can't really give you any more information. Marty's asked a question about Virgin and Qantas. Well, of course, Qantas today announced massive turning off of flights, and essentially, Virgin is probably in a slightly less good position than Qantas. There will obviously be calls for them to get government support. I've been amazed how all of the different industries are lining up, asking for government support, whether it's the entertainment sector or whether it's the airline industry or whether it's the building sector or whatever. Everybody wants government handouts. I have a view, and I could be totally wrong, that it would be much better to give support direct to households. And, the old helicopter money strategy, in other words, give people money and effectively allow them to use that, perhaps to pay down debt, which would be good, or perhaps to do other things. Because if you give it to businesses but don't actually support households, then the question is, unless those businesses can employ households still don't end up with anything. So it needs to be either of, both of them, rather than either or. But I actually think the household sector, I remember 32% of houses with a mortgage have cash flow problems today before all this hit. Now, Kiblin's asked about real commercial real estate. Tough to know, because of course commercial real estate is behaving quite differently. But of course, if businesses are effectively having to close or having to hunker down, they're going to be less likely to demand commercial space. They'll be in some sort of lease arrangement or whatever. I would expect to see significant falls there. And in fact, if you look at what happened in the global financial crisis, it was residential first, but effectively commercial followed, and I would expect a similar track. Have I washed my hands today? Many times, many, many times. And just so you understand, my wife has a serious illness, and it's a breathing-related illness. So we are already taking very serious steps here to ensure that she's kept insulated and isolated from the broader community. So she doesn't go out now, other than the walk down the hill and round the corner. Nowhere close to people. Sorry, I missed that one. Michael, thank you. I'll answer that question in just a second. The point there is it's real already. So we're actually having to do the hand washing. We're having to do the, cleaning everything on a regular basis. We've stopped visitors to the house. In fact, even John Adams and I will still do shows, but I asked John now to do it remotely rather than actually in the studio here, simply because we can't take the risk. Because if she were to get the virus, it would definitely be a death sentence for her. And that's real, and this is now. So this is really serious stuff. Michael, you asked, why don't banks, utilities introduce payment holidays for a month or two? I think they probably will. And in fact, some of the banks came out today through the ABA and said, if people are in hardship, firm the bank up. And I think it's worth just underscoring, there is already an existing hardship relationship and structure. Was legislated at the time of the global financial crisis, which basically says if you have difficulties with regard to payments, talk to the bank, and if they have an obligation to help you to restructure in whatever way makes the most sense. Now, Suncorp came out quite recently and said, talk to us. We're happy to look at changing interest structures, maybe even repayment holidays, those sorts of things. So they're putting a lot of onus on individuals to reach to the bank rather than the bank coming the other way. And I think that's a mistake. But anyway, at least anybody who's got a mortgage that they're struggling to pay because of what's happened recently, pick up the phone or Skype. Don't go into the branch. Go talk to your lender and basically lay it out. You'll find that they will be quite accommodative at the moment. Now, banks are able to deal with this for a short period of time, maybe 30 days, 60 days. Once the loan is 90 days in arrears, at the moment, they would have to declare the loan as effectively in default. And that then changes the capital ratios that they would have to support against it. It would actually go up. And so what we may see is an initial 30 or 60 day window to try and give people a bit of wriggle room. With regard to utilities, I think that's right. I think rates we should also look at. So basically what we need to do is we need to understand that people are going to be struggling to pay just very basic bills. And my other piece of advice to people who are in this situation, and I've said this many times, many people don't know what they spend and where it goes. Now's the time to understand what your budget is. Go through those payments and those payment schedules and work out what's really critical and what is not critical. And essentially start, you know, turning some of those off. The other thing to say is if you have debts and you are trying to figure out what to pay off first, generally my advice, for what it's worth, it's not financial advice, is to focus on the debts that are actually with the highest interest rates, because the highest interest rates are going to erode more of your financial status into the future. All right, what else have we got? Was the first home buyers grant a scheme to get young buyers in before a huge decline in prices? That's from Elise. Look, I don't think that ScoMo thought that the financial system was going to collapse when he made his promise back in May to support higher home prices and to introduce a scheme, right? The fact is that a number of people were dragged into the market with a 5% deposit at the peak of the market. I said at the time, you can go back over my last shows, that was a mistake, it should never have been done. They have no wriggle room. And unfortunately, we're going to find some of those going to be most exposed because they've got big mortgages, because they're still having to pay the interest and repayments on 95%, not on 80%. It's just that 80-95% piece is guaranteed by the government. So yeah, I'm afraid it was a mistaken strategy, but I would not be surprised, frankly, to see the government come out with another tranche of similar incentive to try and get people to go buy into the property market even now, simply because they have a fixation on keeping property prices up. Property prices go high, you get a wealth effect. Firstly, property prices go high, the banks don't have any negative issues on their balance sheets, so they look squeaky clean. But just remember, we have a very high debt-to-income ratio. We have a very high debt-to-GDP ratio. You know, we're in first and second position on those particular metrics. We are debted out. And yet, I fear that the government is going to try and push more of it out. So, very bad strategy, I'm afraid. Okay, what else? Is there a timeline on the amendment to the ban legislation? Many thanks for everything you're doing. Yeah, I believe that it's been introduced. It was actually tabled and all those sorts of things. There will be a vote, but I don't know exactly when that will be. If Rob is on, he might want to post a comment on the timeline. But I know that it was formally tabled. It was a bit of a surprise to everybody that it was, because they thought it was going to be introduced and it was actually tabled and presented, and they did the first reading and things. So it's live. It's also very important, right? Because if in fact we can get that bill in and confirm that deposits aren't bailable, as it were, that would be a good thing. Okay, now Rachel says, not more market intervention. Market trading has a purpose, but it's subtle. It provides liquidity and price signals, both important. Controlling volatility is thinning, like Japan. I agree. And that's really the point. There is a point beyond which it doesn't make any difference. So if you go back through the last 3 days, right, the Federal Reserve in the US announced a $1.5 trillion repo operation. $1.5 trillion, right? But less than 10% was actually taken up. So that failed. Then they tried asset purchases, treasuries, those sorts of things, to try and actually sort it out. That didn't work. And then they actually went to massive interest rate cuts to try and do that. And that's really the point. There's a point beyond which throwing more liquidity into the system doesn't help, because liquidity isn't the issue, right? Actually, what really is the issue is lack of confidence. And there are so many people in the financial system who have this blind faith in central banks' ability to always magically wave a wand and suddenly fix everything again, right? I did a post on Twitter the other week to say central bankers are not immortals. They don't have second sight. They don't have superior capabilities, right? And yet so many people seem to attribute to that. And the thing about central banks is they're all sort of thinking the same. Now they're all under the BIS banner. And frankly, my concern is that there's very little independent thinking amongst central bankers. They're all following the same path. They're all driving rates down. They're all throwing more liquidity in. But we've come to the point where liquidity is not the issue. Liquidity is, of course, though, trying to drive those bond rates lower. And the reason for that, as I showed you in that earlier chart, is because bond rates become effectively a critical linchpin. If bond rates go up, corporates start falling over. And just like with the low oil price, you know, thanks to what Saudi did with Russia, the low oil price has put huge pressure on a lot of the shale oil producers in the US who are massively leveraged to the hilt with junk bonds, triple B and worse. And those rates have gone through the roof. So effectively, they're being squeezed two ways. Production price down, funding up, and the prediction are that a number of those will actually fall over very quickly. There's a wonderful comment there. If I can find it, I missed it again. Something along the lines of, should I increase my body fat to avoid against starvation? That's a very interesting analogy, and it's probably right, yeah. There is a nice middle point that makes sense, but if you go too far, then it doesn't really help. Does the Bannon legislation delineate between personal and business deposits? No, it doesn't. It doesn't appear to. It does delineate, though, between corporate and non-corporate. So, for example, if you have a business that's a corporate business, I don't think it's the same as if it's a sort of small business. So it tends to be looking at deposits and small businesses, I think. Okay, now there's a question there about the redraw facility. Do you think, how does that work? Yeah, the offset is the interesting question. Nobody knows, unfortunately. I can't answer that because nobody knows about it. I think ScoMo should lead money printing machines to every house. Lend money printing machines to every house. The interesting question is money printing, you know, as we've shown on our shows, just devalues everything. So the numbers get bigger, but it doesn't necessarily mean that anything else is happening. So that's, I think, a very important point. Now, there's a question there about leveraged EFTs. Yeah, I'm very concerned about those. There are lots of these fancy financial products that people get into without understanding. Same would be true with the hybrids. So even hybrids were being sold to retail investors. And hybrid bonds, of course, are basically bonds that convert to equity if the bank needs them, have quite a high coupon, but nevertheless, it does have a significant issue. And unfortunately, very many people are going to get caught because I think the hybrids are going to get definitely caught. Let the business crash, pay citizens. All right. Now, what I'm going to do is, because of the noise on the channel at the moment, I'm just going to go through some of the questions I have submitted. And then perhaps what we can do is come back to the chat just at the end. So just bear with me. I'm just going to switch over to this particular view. All right. So this was a question that I got earlier on. What alternative is there other than a devastating crash? Is there for resetting the monetary system? How can we make housing affordable again? And are money worth something again? How did we all go so nuts financially enslaving ourselves up to our eyeballs like this? So, you know, Gary, very good point there. The fact of the matter is we've had a financialization of the industry for years and years and years and years. And as a result of that, we've allowed the banking system to get out of hand. Banks essentially have become to the point where it is more about the banking system than about the real economy. People can't get funding to effectively drive their businesses. People can't get what they need to be able to invest in new ventures and those sorts of things. Everybody wants to just throw more mortgages at it. Deregulation of the financial system caused it. The inflation of The home price linked to mortgages is part of it too. All of that is essentially going the same way. And the fact of the matter is that the whole point of trying to come back to some sort of semblance of reality needs a reset. A reset to a new way of thinking about finance. So finance should be something which enables society and enables businesses to work rather than just support mortgages. So, yeah, the key point here is that we need a different way of thinking about it, right? And essentially, we've got to the point where effectively the whole mode of operation needs to change, because essentially the idea of just funneling everything through credit and getting ever more credit is the root cause of what we've got to deal with. So that's what I think in terms of what needs to change. It's going to be very tough. It's going to be very hard, but I think it needs to be done. So, Michael, thank you for that. Let me just come on. What's your view on how low the Aussie US dollar will go? Probably below 60, could go down to 55 is my view. But of course, everyone's chasing exchange rates down because everyone's doing the same liquidity and everything else. So it may not go as low as that immediately, but international investors are getting very jittery about Australia and the Australian economy. So hopefully that will help. Okay, Melinda said, I have questions for you tonight. Be very much appreciated. Before I want to thank you for your amazing and brave work you do. I'm an enter when it comes to finance, so in advance, I apologize for these questions. Silly or lacking some basic knowledge, but I've been following your videos for over a year and found them immensely informative and helpful, even as someone listening from the general public. So thanks for creating the channel. You're welcome. Great to see that you found it useful. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. My questions. I've managed to have close to 100K savings with no debt of any sort. It's in cash at the moment in the bank. I'm planning to ride the ugly wave of likely house price falls as my first opportunity to buy a house in Melbourne for an affordable price. I'm 39, 100K income renting at the moment. I feel I should invest my money for the moment as it may not hold a value in the bank as cash. Now, this is the tricky one, isn't it? So where do I invest? Do I invest in gold, silver? I'm actually uncertain what to invest in. Would it make to hold its value? Now, here's the thing. You've got to understand, you know, are you really about trying to hold the value you've got, or is it about trying to grow it? Because those two things are not necessarily the same. Okay, there's inflation running, so it means that if you hold it in cash, you lose money every year in real terms because inflation eats away at the value of the money. If you hold it in a bank and shop around, you can still get term deposits with some interest, not a vast amount, but some. That's what I've done. So now, gold and silver, there's a really big debate because there are people who are very bullish about gold and silver as one, some potential upside, and two, as a store of value. But you've got to hold the gold physically yourself or get somebody to hold it for you, one of the bullion operators, firstly. Secondly, if you look at what's happened to the silver price and the gold price, it's been wobbling up, wobbling down. Now, okay, if you go take a long term, gold price is up higher than where it was. But because of what I said earlier on, there's a combination of connections between the gold price and the derivatives. Those prices are massively manipulated because of big traders. So I'm not sure that gold and silver are necessarily as simple and straightforward in terms of what needs to be done relative to you know, what people might think. So, and of course, gold can be grabbed. There's a law that says it could. What to look for, other than your videos, to know when it's finally time to buy. So I would be looking at where unemployment's going. If unemployment continues to rise, prices will probably continue to drop. If unemployment starts to level out, that's going to be an indicator of the fact that prices may begin to turn again. Also, if you start to see the banks turning up their lending, because the biggest sort of co-relationships between home prices is one, credit supply, and two, unemployment. Those two are the biggest flags, so watch those. He said, then he said, she's planning to put 10K worth into some shares like Tony Lacantro's suggested. Is this a reasonable strategy? Look, that's what Tony said, I think, was, look, you know, put a little bit in and see what happens. It's speculative, right? As long as you understand it's speculative, you might lose it. it's quite a good thing to do. At your age, it's probably a good strategy. You know, the question is, you know, which ones to pick? I can't really tell you which ones to pick, but, you know, there are people who enjoy doing that and sometimes make money and sometimes lose money. But, you know, it is speculative. And as long as you understand that, and you understand that by speculation, it means you could lose it and you can afford to lose it, no problems. I wouldn't do it personally, but that's just me. I'm more conservative. But I'm older as well, so I've got less chance to recoup losses if, in fact, things go pretty bad for a period of time, right? If you're younger, you've probably got time to recover. And that's one of the things that's worth stating more broadly. I've been through four crashes. And every crash has essentially seen prices go up, then drop, go up, and then drop, go up, and then drop. And if you take just a little snapshot, it looks pretty horrendous. But if you look at the long term, the compounding effect of inflation, everything else, stock returns have not been too bad. In fact, if you compare returns on property and stocks, generally over the long term, they're pretty comparable, which you think about is right, because otherwise you get arbitrage between the two. The point to make there is that you can't necessarily make good decisions just for a very short window unless you're a trader. If you're a trader, then effectively you play the market and you're a speculator. And I do sometimes understand that people get confused between trading and speculation and effectively long-term holding. I've always been the long-term holder. I don't trade. I don't speculate. Others do. And the last part of your question was, whoops. Sorry, let's go this way. There you go. Also seems that China has now managed to contain the virus, so they say. Could mean that the Chinese yuan will be a safe currency for a while or an easy investment option. Well, very interesting. So there isn't a school of thought that says that the US dollar, that has been effectively the reserve currency for a long time, may at some point lose that status. And some have speculated that the yuan could be the next cab off the rank. And in fact, it's true to say that the whole point here is that nobody quite knows how this is going to play out. What is true is that China has a massive manufacturing base, which means that it can turn its economy down and it can turn its economy up very quickly. It's not true of our economy and some other economies too around the world. So they are actually quite well positioned. And of course, they're large and they have plenty of capital firepower still left. So, you know, in the long term, it could well be that the tussle between the US and China swings more towards China. Of course, the US will do all they can to try and stop it. So hard to know, I think. So I hope that helped Melinda with some of those observations and comments. Great questions. And in fact, what you were able to do there is to crystallize a lot of other people's questions that I had and put them into that little form. Now, let me come back to the chat and see what's going on. Thank you very much for the moderators to help knock out some of the noise, and apologize again. Somebody suggested special drawing rights. I don't know much about them, so I can't help there. Gen C, do you think the bond market will crash and interest rates will rise significantly? I think it's quite likely. There is a scenario into the future that says that the very low interest rate strategies are taking us to a point where we start seeing the reverse happen, where effectively you lose faith in the currency and interest rates then have to go up to try and to basically reinstate it. The difficulty, of course, if interest rates were to rise with the amount of debt in the system around the world, we've got more debt than we've ever had, it's going to be very hard for people to be leveraged and still maintain those repayments. And many corporates, particularly corporates in the US, have been borrowing big at very low rates for buyback schemes to lift the share values. It's not real creative use of money. It's just basically financial engineering again. And that's another problem, because if rates rise, they're going to have to pay a hell of a lot more. So it's a really, really complex and difficult situation. But the bottom line to me is that the truth of the matter, whether you like it or not, is that we don't quite know how this is going to play out. And, you know, look at John Adams' various scenarios. So he talks about Armageddon, right? And basically says it could be inflationary, it could be deflationary, it could be the currency, it could be... So there are lots of different scenarios. Unfortunately, they all end up creating real pain for real people. And frankly, that's a really big deal. I think scammers should lend money printing machines to everyone instead of stimulus packages. Yeah, well, you know, let's just make up our own currency. Look, there are some people out there who basically say, now's the time to create a whole new currency and just move to that. Now, there are also people who have the, you know, the plots that says this is part of a global conspiracy to move to a centralized digital currency or, you know. There's a lot of those sorts of pieces of talk. I have to say that I'm quite sceptical about some of these more extreme views. There's no evidence that I've seen for it. What I will tell you is that central bankers think the same way because they're all out of the same stable, as it were. They all talk to each other. As I said earlier on, we need a different strategy. But certainly there could well be, you know, some quite interesting variations and themes on the way that currencies evolve and develop. Martin, do you follow Ray Dalio? Have you seen his video, How the Economic Machine Works? Yes, I have. I think he's got his finger on some of the pulse, but not all of the pulse. I probably haven't got time to go into that in detail now. Perhaps what I should do, if you're interested in exploring a bit further, I might do that as a separate conversation, because I really need to go through the key points so that everybody else understands what it is that he's suggesting. The fact of the matter is, there are lots of theories about the way that the economy works. So it's interesting, if you think of Harry Dent and Lynette Tsang, right? They both talk about there's going to be a reset, but they have quite different theories as to how the reset's going to happen, when it's going to happen, and what the outcome will be. So there are lots of different views and opinions out there. I have to say that the chances of us coming through this whole financial crisis without a significant set of impacts is very low. I hope that there are enough people in power to take us in the right direction and not just try and push it back to where we were and say, this is a bit of a blip, now let's get back to business as normal, right? Because business as normal wasn't business as normal, as I discussed earlier on. We need a new strategy and a new way of thinking. I worry that, unfortunately, the Treasury, the Reserve Bank, the government will try and just put the genie back in the bottle again and give yet more support to the banking system and more support to bankers, rather than focusing on the real economy and creating real jobs and effectively moving us into a different mode of operation. And look, the fact of the matter is, if we had, maybe it's a you know, a government-backed bank, somebody to actually lend to productive businesses, business purposes, we could really move this economy on very significantly and take us to a very different state than where we are now. I worry that the mortgage conversation and home prices, they've just swamped everything else out, unfortunately. Right, somebody's just put there that the Aussie dollar's at 60.3 cents. I can't check that, but it wouldn't be surprising. Now, Nicholas asked, we won't hold you on anything, suggested ASX stocks to buy, opinion? Okay, so look, Coles and Woolies doing jolly well at the moment because they're basically pushing momentum through their stores and they're going to hire more people. I think also, if you think about energy stocks and particularly, you know, power, we're going to need power, right? If you think of people working from home, then maybe some of the telecommunication stocks would be interesting. So think of it like, you know, which are the upside and which are the downside? If you're in the medical sector, if you're creating masks or if you're creating breathing machines, that's going to go up. Some of the bio stocks, possibly. Clearly, the downside is going to be tourism. It's going to be transport, transport issues, holidays, those sorts of things. I think the banks are going to have a hard time for a long time. Excuse me. I hold some bank shares, but not many. And I basically hold them because I want to get information about the banks, and they send stuff out. So that's why I hold bank shares around there for any other reason. Otherwise, I wouldn't. So that's just sort of my perspective. So I hope that may help. Any news on the cash ban, says Jeremy. Yep. So the cash ban is on the order paper for the week of the, I think it's 23rd of March when they're back. The latest gossip on this, though, is that the Parliament will be operating in sort of isolation mode. So in other words, there'll be perhaps a smaller quorum, and they'll be focusing very much on the initiatives which will, I think, be announced tomorrow by ScoMo, which will, I think, be big. I think will be a lot bigger than the phase one stimulus. And as a result of that, the cash ban might get pushed to one side. There's still heavy pressure on politicians across the aisle from people phoning them up complaining about the cash ban, so they know. And of course, Alan Jones has been hammering away on it with Matt Berry for a couple of weeks now, which is great. So there's still a lot of pressure being applied. And Robbie Barwick said to me earlier on today, he felt that it's more likely that it probably wouldn't be discussed. Of course, if the Senate did pass it and there were no changes, it would be law. If the Senate changed its subject, passed it subject to the changes that are required, it could take a bit longer. So that's the latest. Now, Binary Ginger says, I've got 250k in my offset, about to put it into shares, but now I have no idea. If they devalue the currency or bail in, isn't it better to have it invested? Well, it depends a little bit. There's no certainty here, right? So you could invest it in the stock market, and you could stock market go down another 50%, right? Might not. You could, go for government bonds, I suppose. That's perhaps a little bit more certain, but no, not totally certain. Or you can hold it in the bank and hope that the 250k deposit really is there, if it was ever called upon, and that the banks wouldn't bail in. There is no certainty, and I keep coming back to this, I'm sorry to have to say it again, there is no certainty in the investment options you've got. You're going to be taking risks whichever way you go, and then you've got to sort of trade off risk one to risk two to risk three to risk four. The trouble is, there is an imperfect information about the bail-in. I've tried to explain why that's the case. There's imperfect information about the future trajectory of the stock markets for obvious reasons. It's a tough time. Really is a tough time. Sovereign Border says, a nation rating as a creditor or a debtor is only as good as the revenue it raises from taxes. There is no value in printing colourful paper for the hell of it. Well, I agree with that. Look, earlier on I said, what about a transaction tax? I was serious, right? We need to find different mechanisms to be able to, put money in. I suspect we're going to find the government will throw a lot of money at trying to support the economy and individuals and businesses. All of that, of course, will have to be paid back eventually, so it increases the government debt. Now, our debt to GDP in terms of government debt's very low. Most of the debt's in the private sector at the moment. So there is capacity. We have fiscal space, as they say in the IMF speak, to do stuff. But I agree with you that what we should be trying to do is to move the economy onto a level playing field and essentially to be able to drive some of the benefits of that to broader community. And I come back to this basic point. Government and banks are not there for their own ends. Governments and banks are there to enable people in the country to have a better quality of life and to essentially have a productive and profitable life. That's the way around it has to be. And unfortunately, we've lost the plot because the banking system has become the center of gravity around which government and everything else revolves. So I am calling for the right sizing of the finance sector. There are roles for finance, but not as many as we've currently got. Can you explain the Fed's discount window and why Westpac and NAB went there in 2008? Well, basically, Harold, the way I think about it, it was a source of liquidity for those two banks in 2008. The Fed basically made that available at a set price to any bank that wanted it around the world. They supported Deutsche Bank, they supported a number in the US and another banks around the world, including, as you say, NAB and Westpac. Now, the funding was quite cheap. So there was a price and there was also an availability. And in that particular situation, those banks were under some pressure, liquidity pressure, because they were unable to raise the funding that they needed. And it's worth just reflecting, banks in Australia have a lot of long-term funding. The average is more than 5 years, but they also have a certain amount of 90-day revolving. And it's the 90-day revolving they have to keep turning. If, in fact, the markets go to kilter and the price goes up, it's very hard for them to roll that over. So they can get into liquidity issues quite quickly, and I suspect that was happening around the global financial crisis. And look, I must tell you, back in 2007, 2008, the reason that we actually got out of jail here in Australia was not Rudd's stimulus package. Helped a bit. The reason we got out of jail was because China did massive stimulus, and that flowed into Australia in terms of demanding our exports. And we got help from the Fed for those two particular banks who had a specific issue. So it was part of the tapestry. And of course, the Fed didn't disclose this for 2 or 3 years, right? And it came out later that, in fact, two banks in Australia had been effectively supported by the Fed through the global financial crisis. Okay. Now, I'm pretty much on time here. Top five credit unions, says Brett. Look, I can't give you a list. What I can say is if you go to the COBA site, they list them all out there. And what I would do is I would either look at some in your locale or, do a little bit of research in terms of the size and shape of them. But I'm not going to start mentioning specific names on the show. That wouldn't be very fair, I don't think. What if the government printed the money to pay off the debt and started again? How much would the Aussie dollar drop? Depends a little bit, Rodney, on how it was done, because, of course, it is very true to say that we have a lot of debt in the system, right? And it would take quite a lot, and what point would you reset it to? There's also an argument, and this is one I've come to a few times, but, we've got very inflated house prices and very big debt on them. What happens if we took both of them down at the same time? So basically did a revaluation on both sides of the equation back to more normal levels. Now, I think whilst that would sound quite shocking because effectively people would see the value go down, it would actually help to balance. And I think we did it carefully. That wouldn't necessarily destroy the dollar the same way. But it would, of course, change some of the international dynamics. Okay. Random question. Was it you that composed the In the Interest of the People intro and outro? And what's your prediction of the unequal unemployment rate that we released on Thursday? Wow, okay. Yes, I compose the music. It's one of the things that I do on the side. So both for this channel and for the Interest of the People channel. Unemployment rate, I think it'll be higher. How much higher is the hard point? Because really, the virus has yet to hit, and of course it's retrospective, so I'm still thinking maybe 5.3-ish. Okay. Is a lower Aussie dollar bad for the country? Okay. Yeah. So the point there is if the dollar goes down, that signals two things. It signals that international investors are less attracted by our economy, which means that the amount of money that we need to flow in on an ongoing basis may not happen. Secondly, our imports effectively rise, which means inflation rises. And that's not necessarily a good thing. So, things will cost more. On the other hand, our exports will be very cheap because that means that effectively we'd be able to perhaps sell them more effectively overseas. So the Reserve Bank often uses the exchange rate to try and drive our exports cheap, helps that way, and also to bring a bit of inflation. Remember, of course, they're still targeting 2-3% inflation, so that's why they do it. But there are other consequences, and at some point, faith in the dollar dissipates, and we've seen that around the world with other currencies, and that's the concern. And there's a credit code red book that we might want to read. I think John Adams and I discussed this some time ago. Quite important because it explains what happens when you get to that point. Okay, so I'm just going to finish off now. Let me just go back to my slideshow and just a quick few closing remarks. There's more on the blog. If you want to see the blog, all my posts go there, including all the videos and a lot more material. You can sign up and get notifications. If you'd like to support us, there are mechanisms, Patreon. We have some people who support us on Patreon. Thank you very much for those who do. It really does make a big difference. We don't make money from this, but it helps to cover the costs. Or if you want to make a one-off donation, you can via PayPal. Again, very simple to do, and people do that. Thank you very much for those who do. Bitcoin. I even have a Bitcoin QR because people asked about that. My Bitcoin isn't worth very much at the best of times. It's worth even less at the moment, but it's there as well. Just want to tell you about, I've designed a thing called Digital Finance Analytics Intelligent Insight today, right? And that is now going to be available through some merch. And there's things like some stickers and some mugs and what have you. It's a bit of an experiment, just gone live now. So if you find another way to support what we do, there's always DFA merch, and if that goes well, I might add some other to it. I know that some key people were quite keen to have Edwin's shirt as well, so we might do a few other things. We'll have a look at that. But anyway, so it's just gone live. If you have a look, tell me what you think. If you don't like the design, tell me that too. I can always change it and those sorts of things. So that's that. A few just quick top hits. Shock and Awe, that was the one I did to talk about basically what was done yesterday. Markets under stress with Tony Lecantro, very popular. Tony's great value. You love him or hate him, but he's very clear on his opinions. Tarek Brooker, Is Your Super at Risk? That's worth listening to again now because there are many people with super in the wrong place. Question is, can you do much about it? Edwin spoke about the listings pandemic. And then there are two on the Interest of the People channel about central banks and their unholy monetary theology on the people, which is what we spoke about earlier on. And Your Bank Deposit is Literally a Rigged Commercial Loan, which I touched on earlier on. They're some of the most popular ones that are going on at the moment. Okay, next post will be a live event, will be the 21st of March 2020, same time, 8 p.m. Sydney time. And I hope that's been of some use tonight. Let me just come back to the main cam. One last quick look at the comments. Appreciate the moderators doing great work in terms of just cleaning up the stream. And again, apologize for those who didn't get their say because of it. There's a few comments there. I'm not really going to have... how deep negative interest rates may go down. So the Reserve Bank said we'll never do negative interest rates. The IMF, in their paper last year, said that you would need a 4% drop in rates to be able to have the same effect as you had around the time of the global financial crisis. If that would have come in, you'd have a negative 3% interest rate or thereabouts. Now, whether it will be on all deposits, in Germany, they actually are putting negative rates on most deposits now. Whether it will be just on the bank to reserve bank rates, who knows? But this could be quite serious if they went that route. I hope they don't. I think it will be a catastrophe. Okay. Well, I want to say thank you so much for spending the time that you've spent with me. I hope you found this informative. I haven't been able to give you all the answers, but hopefully I've given you some context of what's going on. What I would say is, thank you, Dawn, I appreciate that. What I would say is stay safe. Social isolation is probably good at the moment. And if you do have financial pressures and you have a mortgage, remember, the bank is there to help. They do have a hardship scheme. They are obliged to have the conversation with you, so go talk to them. It's worth thinking about cash flows and thinking about whether there are things that you can afford not to continue to pay for at the moment, you know, if you've got financial pressures. And remember also that with interest rates very low, if you haven't refinanced your mortgage in the last year or so, you can probably find a cheaper mortgage. And people have been able to find a little bit more coming out as a result of that. Now, in the current environment, it might be difficult, but I still think it's worth it. So I probably have missed a few questions. If I have, I apologize. If you want your question answered, the other way to do it is to send me the question via the blog, and I will try and answer it independently. Gold, silver, cryptos. And what was your question? If you send it to me again, I'll try and answer your question before I go off. Anyway, thank you for your time. Good luck. Stay safe. And I guess we'll be doing this all again in a month's time. It'll be interesting to see how different the world is then. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics signing off. See you next time.